Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily and these days more than daily politics podcast. I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. So, should the 21 MPs ousted from the Tory party after they rebelled on Brexit be allowed back in? That's the question being asked today after Boris Johnson appeared to offer Conservative rebels an olive branch, writing to them, or getting his chief whip to spell out a potential appeals process. James, is this a sign of the band coming back together?
No, because I don't think this is going to apply to everybody. I think those people who voted against Theresa May's deal and voted to hand control of the order paper, take control of the order paper away from the government, they ain't coming back in any circumstance. The more interesting question are the people who voted for May's deal, but then voted in what they saw as an anti-no deal measure. I think there might be some hope for some of these people if they were prepared to indicate that they essentially now recanted on their position, that they now were prepared to back leaving come what may. I also think that it is worth reflecting that their strategic judgment was wrong. There's a very interesting Twitter thread from Charles Grant, the director of the Centre for European Reform, who no one could accuse of being a kind of rabid Brexiteer or of being a Brexiteer of any sort, really. And he is pointing out that he has been talking to officials in Brussels, and EU officials think that Parliament's actions have made a deal at this October Council less likely. This is the problem. And I think when you see there is a rough landing zone for a deal emerging, but it requires some compromise on the EU side as well. And Parliament has removed the incentive for that. And I think in a way, the problem with what the rebels did was, you know, it was worse than a crime. It was a mistake.
Fraser, if you look at the aftermath of the decision to withdraw the whip from those rebels, we saw Amber Rudd resign from the cabinet at the weekend. We've had William Hague branded the most egregious and counterproductive act of self-harm committed by the party leadership that he can recall in his lifetime. Is this an attempt to do some good PR by the Johnson government, even if it doesn't lead to much?
Well, I think it's a way of saying that there is always a route back. I mean, losing the whip isn't like a cardinal sin in the Catholic Church where there isn't a route back. There is a form of forgiveness that if you basically agree to repent, and there's an act of contrition you can sign here, and, you know, you can see the path. But in the Maastricht Rebellion, some people did lose the whip after that. They did get it back if they were able to demonstrate serious good conduct. But the thing is, now there might not be much time to demonstrate that good conduct. So there's some talk of giving them a sort of code of conduct to sign, saying that I promise to respect the manifesto that I was elected on. I also promise not to try to depose a Conservative government and let Corbyn rule instead. Because when you think about it, that's what they were kicked out for. Amber Rudd was on the radio this morning saying, I don't see why them rebelling is any different to the Tories who didn't vote for Theresa May's deal. But there's a night and day difference. The ones who didn't vote for Theresa May's deal were simply not giving the government the approval it sought. What the rebels did last Monday was they voted to take power from a Conservative government, to give power to the Rebel Alliance, which you outlined brilliantly in your cover story this week, Katie, and to allow Jeremy Corbyn to basically call the shots, to issue instructions to a Conservative government enforced by MPs passing laws. So the Tories then actually changed sides. Now, I'm all for broad churches, but the question is, what is beyond the pale? And I think if you actually decide to disempower the party that you were elected by your constituents to represent, then that is pretty much beyond the pale. So I do think it was right to withdraw the whip, and I think it would take quite a lot to restore it.
And on that, James, if you think about the strategy, or what we believe the electoral strategy of the Conservative Party to be in a general election, which is they might not win a massive majority, but say they were to win a majority of 10 or even a majority of 15, there would be little point, they argue, if you still had someone like David Gawke in your party, because at that point they still wouldn't be able to willing to countenance no deal. So what's the point of bringing back a new parliament when that happens? And there is a question to be asked here, which is, How could you be sure that any of these Tory rebels, even if they said in their appeal court or, you know, session that they repented from their sins and would now stick to the line, how would the Conservative Party be able to trust them to stick to that?
I think there is another element here. Part of this is about restoring the whip to people who are planning to retire. Probably the most upset in the parliamentary party is over Richard Bennion losing the whip, regarded as, you know, a loyal Tory, not someone who was kind of, that, you know, yes, he might have got this one wrong, but doesn't it seem a bit of a pity for his career to end like this? I suspect the bar for those people who are retiring would be lower, for the reasons that you just outlined, than for the people who are going to stay on. I also just think, to pick up on Fraser's point, I find it bizarre that people seem to think that Theresa May's approach to party discipline succeeded. The last time I looked, her premiership ended without her having passed the withdrawal agreement on which she staked her whole premiership. I mean, this argument that Theresa May never did this seems to me a fairly good argument in favour of taking a different approach to parliamentary discipline, because her approach clearly did not bring results.
There's another aspect here that, I mean, right now is being seen as a vindictive act by Boris Johnson, and thinking, OK, you guys defied me, so I'm going to cast you out into the wilderness and never darken our Tory doorstep again. But there's a practical aspect here too. Say the next election returns a Tory majority of 20, and say there are 21 MPs who are willing to vote to again disempower the Conservative government and to have Parliament issue instructions through whatever Corbyn wants, then that's not a majority at all. So I think you need, in this crazy era where MPs are actually willing not just to rebel, but to empower the opposition to instruct the government, you need to be sure that a majority of 20 is a majority of 20. If you get there and you find out that no, nothing has changed and you're still in the quagmire you sought to escape, then there's no point even holding a general election.
I think some of these rebels have voted for other steps which are quite extreme, like attempts to get hold of all the communications of Number 10 aides, for example. If you were really serious about reconciliation and coming back in, would you do that?
I think a lot of them didn't quite know what they were doing, though. I mean, like, if you take Dominic Grieve, he has sort of tasted the vodka of rebellion and decided to finish the bottle. That's what he's done. He's just really going for it. He doesn't know where to stop. I mean, if you take somebody like David Davis or even Jacob Rees-Mogg, they've been rebelling most of their careers. They know where the line is drawn. But the new guys, they've got no idea where the line is drawn. It's like giving them whiskey and car keys to a teenager. You just don't want to trust them, really, with the delicate art of rebellion, because they'll end up trashing the whole government.
Finally, we've spoken about the strategy, which is you need to have a solid majority who are actually going to do your Brexit plan in a new parliament. James, are there any plans underway in CCHQ or in local associations when it comes to candidate selection to ensure these seem to be MPs who are more on brand with the new regime? Because we know that as a result of lots of these whips being withdrawn, there are several plum seats up for grabs.
I'm told that these seats are going to be dribbled out. They're not all going to be selected at once. And I think there is an attempt to get more people onto the candidates list who are kind of high caliber leavers. And I mean, that is one of the things that is happening behind the scenes right now.
There was a rumour that they're running out of sound candidates.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think this is a challenge for them, right?
Anyone listening to this podcast fancies a safe Tory seat, then do get in touch with the chairman of the Conservative Party.
And who is sound?
James, are you tempted?
No, God, no. I can't imagine what. No, but I think this is the. I think they will try and do this. I also think one of the other things about this election is, this election is going to be highly unpredictable all over the place, and when unpredictable things happen in elections, and parties don't quite know which seats they're going to win and which seats they're going to lose, you do end up with some, how should you put it, interesting MPs. And I suspect the next parliament will have a rather large number of interesting MPs, because I suspect that all three main parties will end up winning seats that they never expected to win and failing to take seats that they thought were bankers. I mean, it's going to be a very, very odd dynamic like that.
I'm in the slightly unusual position of thinking these Tory rebels deserve to lose the whip, and also thinking they don't deserve to be let back in, but still also admiring them. They acted for reasons of patriotism, they acted to principle. We sit here and write articles about how politicians should put their principles before their career. That's exactly what these guys did. It's just that their principles led them to think that the Conservatives ought not to govern on this issue. And I think it's fairly logical that it's pretty difficult to then ask the Conservatives to sponsor your future political career. But I think I don't think these guys are traitors or treacherous or anything like that. I think they're honourable men and women who are acting out of the best, perhaps even highest motives. It's just simply if you lose confidence in the Conservative Party and the leader of that party, who was voted by an overwhelming majority of members, then it probably is time for a change.
I also think that in the Evening Standard today, Oliver Letwin, one of the leading rebels, talks about how he wants this parliament to keep going and to hold a referendum before there's a general election. And I think the prospect of, and this is just the wrong way for things to work in British politics. I would have no issue with a referendum if the Labour Party came back the majority after the election and said, right, we've got a mandate from the people for a referendum. But if the Parliament doesn't have confidence in how the executive is handling the biggest issue of the day, the appropriate response is to no confidence in the government, not to leave the government in place, but attempt to dictate to it on what it should do. That's just not how the system is meant to work.
Well, you're right, James, and that's where I do run out of sympathy with the rebels, because we right now have got a parliament that won't let the Prime Minister govern, but won't call an election either. Now, I don't know how many MPs have left the party that voters sent them to represent. There will be dozens of them now who will basically be democracy dodgers. They will be terrified of a general election because it will end their career. Now, a whole bunch of them are retiring. They won't mind anyway. But it's funny that in this parliament, you've got a large number who basically know they're on the last throw of the dice. So they want to extend this partly because they extend their own political careers and they extend the grip of a parliament which, rather than enforce democracy, is now running scared of it.
Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, James. And we look forward to, in the future, the arrival of more interesting MPs and interesting conversations on this podcast.